joining us for another episode of The Garden Pod. My name is Amy Rush, and today I'm joined by my colleague Lindsay Round. Hi, Lindsay.
Hi, Amy.
Could you give us a quick biography to kick us off, please?
Yeah, no problem. So I'm deputy head here in Garden International School. One of my roles that we'll be talking about today is my role in child protection. I've been here for 10 years. Very much established in the culture of our school.
Absolutely. And as you just said, we're going to talk about child protection, basically how schools go about keeping children safe within our care. And in the UK, there's lots of kind of statutory guidelines about keeping children safe, about health and safety on site, about safeguarding, child protection, lots of different words for basically keeping people safe. So when we talk about safeguarding in schools or keeping children safe, what does that actually mean?
I mean, I think you've hit the nail on the head there. There are so many different aspects to it, aren't there? And so, you know, you've got the very much kind of health and safety policy oriented aspects and procedural aspects that make sure that your site is safe, right through to what you do when you have a concern about a student. My role especially falls into that aspect of what we do when we have a concern about a student's well-being. But you have to be operating at all of those levels, don't you? And you have to be thinking about just our day-to-day interactions as teachers with students, like how are we ensuring that we maintain the well-being of students, that we protect ourselves in that role, and that safety is at every single level.
Yeah, absolutely. And that those kinds of safeguarding roles are huge because they go across, as you say, like secure gates, barriers high enough, things that children can't fall over, to the kinds of people, the checks we have to do to allow people on our site, to, as you said, concerns being raised about children. That could be physical health, it could be mental health, it could be something else. You actually did some child protection training for all our secondary staff this morning, and you talked about that line between supporting children but also recognising when things aren't okay and when to pass them on. And it's very complex, it's very layered. So we've got quite a bit to talk about today in terms of some of that. And we're going to talk about your experience, but obviously, like, there's a wider community, and what we do might not be the same as in other schools.
Absolutely.
And it's really very context dependent.
It gets logged, so we've got a very, very secure system. We use CPOMs for logging concerns, and so if a teacher says they have got a concern about a student, and we really encourage, you know, if that concern is small, if it's big, we get people to record that. And then that information will come to me, as well as a very small team of other child protection officers, so that we are maintaining privacy as far as possible. And then I don't work in isolation, but I will be part of the decision making around how we best support the safety of that student, how we best make sure that their well-being is catered to, that if we are worried about harm to them in any way, we are working to increase the safety of that situation and protect them from any factors that we're concerned about.
Yeah, and this is very different in different schools, because in a big school like ours, you have the benefit of being able to have multiple people who are working as a team, who are discussing those cases, who can develop a lot of expertise as well. In a smaller school, you might not have, it might just be the head teacher or somebody who deals with those issues. But then, being a smaller school, there would be fewer other challenges. So that's kind of the setup that you'd have in a bigger school like ours. You tend to have a team of people. Just for anyone listening, parents, educators, who might not have, because you say concerns about a child, but like, what does that mean?
Absolutely. So we are defining different concerns here. So if it was something to do with progress, that's probably not a child protection concern. It might be part of a picture, but ultimately that's not so much what we're going to deal with. if it's a behavioural issue, then again, might be a sign of an underlying child protection concern, but not necessarily something that the child protection team are going to deal with. So we're talking a little bit more around the signs that a student's mental health might not be in a good place. It might be a concern around situations of abuse or neglect, of inappropriate relationships, of basically anything that's more of a threat to the child's safety in that way. And then working you would then be working with other teams such as our counselling team to ensure that we're putting in place the support that child needs.
And those things can be very sensitive because you might be having concerns that a child is, say, suffering neglect at home, but that might be subjective in terms of what parents view as neglect and support, what the child protection officers in school do. So all of this, again, it's very context dependent, very much to do with where you're situated, who your population is, who your community is. How is that different to, say, like a school in the UK being somewhere like the setting we're in? We're in Malaysia, for context.
I'd say there are two levels there to that kind of international variability. So one is the systems and structures that you're working with within a country. So in the UK, there would be very, very, very clear set ways that I would refer out my concerns to wider teams, like social services, for example, that would be able to make a lot of the decisions in that situation.
So kind of other government organisations which would be involved.
Exactly. And that is something that will vary so much between different countries. And being aware of the legal and structural systems that you're working in is obviously incredibly important in this. And it's, you know, as someone who is not born and bred here in Malaysia, then, you know, that's a big bit of learning within the context and trying to just make sure that I'm aware of support services that are around for children when they need them. So that's one aspect of challenge. The second thing that will vary compared to the UK, again, as someone who is coming in, as someone from the UK to do this job here, is that just cultural norm variation as well. So things that I think are child protection issues and things that might be concerns to me might not necessarily have the same kind of threshold, I would say, for people from different cultures. And, you know, that comes down to a lot of different things, you know, when it comes to, for example, the amount of contact time that parents have with their children when they're at home, the supervision that is there and the care that is there at home. You know, there might just be different ideas about, you know, who's best able to provide that care, you know, how much emotional support does that child need at home versus kind of structural support maybe from, for example, someone who is an employed carer rather than parents. When it comes to forms of discipline, we have different kind of thresholds as well. And so one of the things that we very much lean into here in our role is just being really clear and transparent with our families about our homeschool agreement. Obviously, there are still elements there that are subjective about, you know, like what we are suggesting should be in place. But that's the guidance that we can come back to with our families to try and just make sure that we can come to viewpoints that are as shared as possible with that as our baseline as to what should be in place for any child in our community.
And just to be clear, homeschool agreement, I think most schools have this. Yeah. It's normally when you enrol your child at a school, whether it's a private school or a state school, you will basically sign a piece of paper that says, you know, these are the things that I will agree to do. And often it's things like, make sure my child is ready for school, they have the uniform, but you can also obviously include things around discipline or around expectations of support and other things at home. And people might potentially sign those without really reading and really being on board with those mm-hmm. things, but it does mean you have a contract, basically.
Yes, absolutely, absolutely. And so, for example, you know, our homeschool agreement talks about the ideas that we don't condone physical punishment.
Yes.
As a method for disciplining children.
Yeah.
And so that's something that we would come back to and we would explore. And it's not just about us trying to just enforce those ideas, it's about us trying to talk about why we have those principles in place as well.
Yeah. It's a good point about the enforcement, because I wonder how you get away from almost a kind of hierarchy of we're the school and you have to do what we say, and this almost kind of implicit view that the teachers know best and the parents don't, even though we're in their culture and their context.
Yes. Yeah, good question. I think that it comes down to what the issue is that we're dealing with as well. So there are some contexts, aren't there, where a child protection issue, if there's very clear and significant harm being caused to a child, then there are just bottom lines there that we have to work towards, mm-hmm. right? If it is something that is a little bit more about, you know, maybe the communication at home and how things are impacting on a child in terms of the way that the conversations are happening or the expectations that are on a child, then that's something that, again, it is so much more subjective. It's very hard to kind of clearly say, okay, well, this is not the way to do it, and not be just pushing my agenda on a family, but it's about us recognizing the impacts that we're seeing in the moment, and then to really try and work as a partnership wherever possible to just start to shift that.
And it is just that impact, isn't it? Because actually, if the interactions at home are not something that we would recommend to parents, but actually there's no harm being done, then it actually won't come to you at all.
Very true.
Nobody's going to report it. There's not going to be an issue raised if the child is happy and thriving and things are going well.
Yeah, exactly that. Yeah, so if we're not seeing those issues, but it is when that impact starts to happen, and there are various levels that might be noticed then. Yeah. So it might be a subject teacher is recognising that a student is so worried about a test score going home, and that starts to raise some concerns for us. And we'll never, you know, we don't leap into judgment. That's really important in this role. So if a student is having that experience, they might just be highly anxious about their own performance. It's not to say that we're going to jump to the conclusion that that is because of the way the parents will handle that situation. It's very much, you know, one of the biggest things that I have learned through my years of doing this job is the importance of that listening and understanding and not reaching assumptions that are inaccurate in a situation and going into a situation trying to tackle it because I have those assumptions. Mm. It's about very much, you know, what can I understand of the situation? What pieces of information have we got over time that build up a picture? What's the child telling us? What's the child not telling us?
Yeah.
What the parents telling us? What the parents not telling us as well? So,
And with any emotional situation, things are so highly subjective and people view things in different ways and interpret. We keep referring back to parents, but of course it might not be parents.
Absolutely.
It could be other adults. It could be other children. It could be peers with each other. So this might, not every case you deal with is
absolutely
a parenting issue.
Absolutely. And when it comes to that peer on peer situation as well, quite often that will be handled a lot by our pastoral teams who are working within that kind of, you know, it will end up with a potential, you know, sanction in place as well as restorative work that's happening. So yes, absolutely, child protection concerns come in all kinds of forms, and it's definitely not just about parents. And then with those wider situations with peers, we would have varied teams such as heads of year, tutors also involved in those.
And we spoke earlier about other organizations, counseling teams and so on, but we haven't actually mentioned the law at all. So where does kind of the legal framework come into this, or is it the case that most issues are dealt with in school through various routes? Is there a point at which actually it just it's not in our hands anymore.
Absolutely, there are points of that. Thankfully, not the majority of them. You know, that when we're talking about that, we're talking about very, very high level situations, which we have occasionally, but not so frequently.
Yeah. And all schools do.
And all schools do, absolutely. And, you know, one of, and that's a really good point, you know, one of the difficulties, I think, with child protection is, you know, how do you assess that you are getting this right? How do you assess that you're having impact? And on a really surface level, you could say, well, your number of reports goes down,
right?
You know, because you're just caring for these children really, really well.
Fixed everything.
Exactly. There's no child protection here. But actually, in reality, obviously, a great metric over time has been that we get lots of logs and lots of concerns coming through because our staff are really well trained in spotting things. And our relationships are increasingly, I would say, good between students and teachers. And so students report more.
Yeah.
So actually, you know, you have to flip that metric on its head in some ways. To go back to what you're asking, Bethelis, but in terms of those really, you know, those higher level cases, yes, you know, one of the biggest things is making sure that you are, like I said before, aware of the context you're operating within and making sure that you have got that kind of institutional knowledge as well about those wider services. So having a local member of staff, as we do in our school, who is able to say, well, actually, you know, these are the teams you need to go to in this situation, and having those conversations with those teams, that's really, really, really important.
Absolutely. You just said the word challenges. Should we talk about some of the challenges?
Sure.
This is not an easy role to have in a school.
Yeah. Absolutely. You know, you are hearing about the toughest parts of people's lives on a frequency that you would not normally encounter, I would say. You know, I think long before I did this job, obviously, with various roles I've held, I have been involved somewhat in child protection issues and well-being concerns for students. But it just amps up, you know, this is then becoming something that is, you know, we get logs all through the day. And so we know that we are, as child protection officers, often exposed to just concern after concern. And that's a really tricky balance in this role because I think that you get used to it. It's not to say it doesn't affect you, but you kind of get used to dealing with these things a little bit more, and you
the process becomes more routine.
Absolutely, and that just helps you to take off an edge of the emotional reaction because you are confident in what you can do in this situation.
Yeah.
So I suppose that takes away some emotional element of it, but you still have an emotional element because you are hearing about tough things about people you care about. One of the things that I have found incredibly important is the role of supervision in this. So by having a contact who is outside of school.
Do you want to just tell us what supervision is?
Yeah, so this is, I mean, there are two levels to it. So I, as we've mentioned already, I'm part of a team.
Yeah.
And I also know that I'm able to speak to our heads of school, for example, about the decision making that I need to make in a situation. And that's a really important part of it. A lot of that conversation will be about next steps. It will be very much about, okay, well, what can we do in it as well? But what I have as well is supervision with someone who is external, who is a psychologist, who I am able to just process some of these feelings with. So it's not a conversation of, have you thought about doing this or that, or I'm planning to do this or that. It's much more unloading of that emotional burden.
And that's common for people who are in a role of counsellor or therapist or psychologist.
Exactly,
they often have their own supervisor who they offload the emotional side to.
Yeah.
That's the supervision process, which just helps that you're not keeping it all.
Yeah, absolutely. And it's recognising when to get that that is it's so important. And it's interesting, you know, I really notice throughout the year that I can be managing these situations and not feeling that emotional toil. And then at some point, it's just there have been so many that it just starts to build up a little bit. And then that's the point where I really need to go and just tell someone about it. And she sits and she listens.
Yeah.
She will recognise what I'm saying to her. She'll recognise my body language even over Zoom.
Yeah.
That is telling her things about the way I feel. And mostly what she says is, yes, I understand. That's normal.
Yeah.
You know, how are you managing this? And so it's very rare I come out of that conversation with something new.
Yeah.
But I come out of it lighter, and that's the important thing.
Yeah.
And I think that that is such an important protective mechanism in this.
Yeah, absolutely. I do think when you're in these kinds of roles, and it's not just a child protection role, it's common for people who work in, say, the health service or counselling, you do see high rates of burnout or people who just need to take a career break or change career. Because it's hard to understand what it's like dealing with, in the nicest possible way, other people's emotions all the time. Because everyone who's in education, who's in teaching, will know how exhausting it is just talking to people all day.
Yeah.
Talking to people, constantly changing roles, constantly responding to people, being polite, being supportive to all different children. You walk through the canteen, someone runs up, they want you to open a packet, another child talks to you, then there's an argument.
Yeah.
And you're constantly dealing with that. But when the majority of your interactions are not just dealing with things, but dealing with people who are suffering trauma or are very emotional or upset, that it really does take an extra toll.
It does. And I think that a fairly unique aspect to child protection in schools is that we switch constantly between what we're able to process in the moment. So there will be a moment that I've had a really tough conversation, and then I go into the classroom and I have to be on form. And it's brilliant going into the classroom at that moment.
Yeah.
It's exactly what I need. But I don't always have then the processing time of the conversation that I just had as well. So a couple of the things that I found so useful in supervision, a couple of the concepts, are the idea of kind of vicarious trauma, if you like. So obviously, you know, it's far beyond to say that I am traumatised by what I'm hearing. That's not fair, that's not appropriate. But you are hearing people's trauma and you are impacted by that, right? And a lot of the time I don't think I am until, like I said, it's kind of compounded and then it's like, oh, actually, you know, that is that's a lot of heavy stuff I've been hearing about. Let's just process that a little bit. The other thing as well is when your empathy just starts to get exhausted. You know, that's a really difficult thing. You don't want to get into that situation.
Yeah.
And that's kind of a product of hearing this. So without that processing, you know, can you really do the job properly? Can you really be there for the student that needs you in that conversation? And so, you know, you don't want to reach that point. So if you get that kind of empathy fatigue, then you are on the route to some kind of burnout, quite possibly.
Yeah.
So it's monitoring those two things, I would say.
And then schools having systems in place to support child protection officers, just like you would support any teacher, but obviously that's a particular role that needs a particular kind of support.
It's got unique aspects,
for
sure.
Thank you so much, Lindsay. Is there anything we haven't spoken about that you'd like to mention?
No, although I think, you know, for anyone that is listening and thinking about, well, could I do this job? It's so easy to focus on the challenges and the, you know, those are obvious, right? It's one of the most rewarding things I do.
The impact you have is huge.
Well, it's very difficult sometimes to know that and to measure that, because quite often you are dealing with things that are outside of your control.
Yeah.
But it sounds weird after everything we said, but I would seriously recommend this work to anyone. Not to say it isn't challenging, but what you do in this, I think, is very difficult to match in terms of, you know, the sense of care and support that you can give to a student when they're going through a difficult time. So while it is for sure with its challenges, it's such important work. I would encourage anyone with an interest in it to educate themselves with it, to get training and to pursue roles in this.
A lovely point on which to end. Thank you so much.
Thanks, Amy.